Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
Well, good Friday morning, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thank you for taking the time to join us this start of a wonderful weekend, the last weekend in May, and we're starting up in June. A couple of things I want to remind you about. Number one, hurricane season begins Monday, June 1st. There are some, for some of us, tax-free shopping days to help you stock up, so please don't forget that. The other thing, too, possible launch tomorrow. And the one thing that I'm always partial to is June is National Home Ownership Month, so, you know, we're going to have some guests on during the month of June. I'm starting with Monday. It's the first Monday of June, and that means the first Monday of the month is Mortgage Monday. We're going to have Najir on to give us some insight. So please don't forget that. We also don't want to forget the protests that are going on in Minneapolis and other parts around the country. Please remember, peaceful protests, if possible, if at all possible, peaceful protests for those that want to go out and make their voices heard. You know, we don't want you to get hurt. We don't want you to hurt anybody and get in trouble. So, you know, please just be peaceful about it. Be thoughtful about it. Stop destroying your own neighborhood thing, I want to say. Please stop doing that. We just want you to make your get the point across, but be safe about it. But anyway, we want to have a discussion today with black men. And we are asking if you are a black man out there with a story that you want to share or some advice, give us a call. Call into the show. The number is 516-387-1944, 516-387-1944. Now, I put the call out there today and to ask some of the men that have been on the show. And they're doing what they're supposed to be doing for the most part. They're working. Or if they have some time off, they're not going out and trying to harm anybody. You know, we've seen the cases where someone was jogging, someone was bird watching, someone was just minding their own business, and things started to occur. It's almost as if, you know, there's a prison. We're having to have them to kind of either make our own prison or someone's making it for us, and we haven't done anything to deserve it, especially our black men. One of the gentlemen I asked to be on the show today, he was on before a few weeks back talking about Feed the ER. He also posted on Facebook, and I've shared his story on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. Attorney James Simmons is supposed to be joining us today. Mr. Simmons, are you there? Oh, okay. Mr. Simmons will be joining us soon. But if you have a story, And women, we know there's the stories out there. We have not forgotten Breonna Taylor and some other people. But we want to hear from the men because they are disproportionately affected by what's going on. And, you know, we can tell their stories. I have stories that my parents shared with me. I have stories that, you know, I've experienced with men that I've either dated or my current husband, by the way, who's just became a sexy sexagenarian yesterday. But anyway, we want to hear your stories, men. The number, if you have a story, is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. Attorney James Simmons, good morning. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I, as well as can possibly be. And I thank you for taking the time to have a discussion with me today, to share your story. And I saw your Facebook post, and I shared it on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. I was just saying is that I don't want to be here telling the stories myself, because I have stories that were told to me about, you know, my father and what he went through and other relatives, what they went through, and, you know, seen things that my husband has gone through and everything. We need to hear it from the people that are experiencing this. And, in addition to the facts, I want to know how you feel. I want to know how you live day to day. You know, are you, you know, is it the looking over your shoulders? How are you preparing our up-and-coming young men? These are some of the things that I want to know. So I'm going to let you take that over.
Definitely. I mean, you know, obviously these last 30 days have, you know, really been some trying times, not only for the general public because of what's going on with the pandemic, but for our minority communities because of the tragedies that just recently occurred. I mean, we have three highly publicized, media-driven horrible incidents that occurred. And, it's one thing I was watching the other day, they were discussing how, you know, even in the midst of a lockdown, even in the midst of when nobody's out in the streets or they're not really out in the stores, things like that, they talk about the decrease in pollution. They talk about the decrease in, crime in general. I see these conservative posts from time to time where they're talking about, a decrease in mass shootings and things of that nature, which, you know, obviously is laughable in itself because everybody is at home. But one thing we can't escape from is minorities losing their lives for the most trivial situations. And I'm a father of two black boys. I'm from a mixed race family. You know, my mom is from India. My dad is African American, and even his ancestry.com says he's mixed up too. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at me and you look at my kids, you don't see a mixed race person. You see a black family. And you know, one of the things that struck me is, look, I grew up in rural North Carolina. I've dealt with this, just maltreatment, different treatment, you know, growing up. And so when you are faced with, you know, even, you know, early 90s, I mean, it's not anything that's even that old, but I mean, even then, you know, folks following you around in a grocery store, you know, you looking at your dad wondering, you know, why are they worried about what we're looking at, you know? And he's trying to tell you, just be calm, you know, don't say anything, be quiet. You know, you're a little kid. You don't know what it's really about. But then those instances kind of grow, and you kind of start picking up more things and getting more desensitized to how people interact with you versus someone else with a different skin tone. And so, you know, I can probably point, and that's one of the things, I did have a post that I had put out there, and it picked up for quite a few people because I guess it resonated with a lot of folks who either didn't know, or there were folks who they've had some of the same similar instances happen with them throughout their life. And they're like, man, you know, finally let's have an opportunity to talk about it. And so, you know, one of the biggest concerns for me is, well, look, I don't want to leave this kind of world to my boys. You know, I look at my 5-year-old, he's only 5, but he's tall for his age. He's lanky. He's built a little weird. He's bigger. He's going to be bigger than his dad. But for most folks, you know, for most non-minorities, I'll just put it that way, they're not worried about their kid being, you know, bigger than them or growing or whatever. They think that that's, you know, that's awesome. You know what I mean? My child is going to be, you know, at an advantage. He's going to be taller. He's going to be slimmer, whatever. I look at it as, no, he looks older. And I'm wondering if he could be pictured as Tamir Rice or some other child that, you know, they think is a threat, a Trayvon Martin, a Jordan Davis. You know, I live two blocks from where Jordan Davis was gunned down in Jacksonville. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you hear these stories. It's every year. There's numbers of them. And all you can do is really think about it and think about how there's such a large disparity and how you don't want that to be something that affects your family. And even with this George Floyd situation, you know, his impact didn't just impact Minneapolis. It impacted, you know, minority communities and folks all across the country, even including one of his best friends that people didn't even know was an NBA player. You know, and he's finding out about his best friend dying from 50 text messages and waking up in the morning to see a video of his friend being killed. And this is the type of stuff that we're being force-fed. And so it does affect me as a person and me as a African-American male and having to guide my sons. But this also impacts the way that I operate in the daily life. You know, I'm also an attorney. And so when I'm trying to market or I'm trying to, you know, do community service events, all these other things, I can't just put on the cap of I'm the attorney and think that that's it, because people don't just see that. They see skin tone. They see body build. They see tone of voice. They see, you know, whatever stereotypes they may have had about folks that look like me. And so I'm constantly having to battle all of that. And yeah, you're right. I mean, you asked about how a person would perceive minority males, how I perceive law enforcement. You know, I had a discussion with my wife the other day. With her, I said to her, I said, you know what? I am not afraid of law enforcement. It's not that I fear them. What I feel is an awkwardness, a anxiety. I could be for the you know, you had mentioned the Feed the ER project we had discussed a few weeks back. One of the things I told my wife, I said, you know, I go to these ERs and I will see an armed officer at the door, and I know he's there just to make sure that he is maintaining the front entrances of that ER that is treating COVID-19 folks safe and keeping folks from, you know, whatever at the ER. But I still felt uneasy delivering food to that ER with him there, because I wondered if he was going to ask me questions, if he was going to wonder why I'm blocking an entranceway, you know, what was my involvement, you know, do I have someone here that I need to be talking to, like, all those kinds of things. And it's ingrained that I would have an apprehension of law enforcement more so than anybody else. And I had this similar conversation with a white colleague of mine who's also a personal injury attorney in another field. He was struck by some of the things I put on social media. And so he wanted to call, get my insight. And he said, man, the biggest thing that struck me was you mentioning how your interactions with the police would have went one way or the other. Unfortunately, they didn't go the other way. But I never see the police as a threat. And he was honest. He said, you know, I've always been taught and always raised that these are folks that are protecting me and I can go to them for safety. And I've never thought of them as being someone who I would need to be cautious or afraid of. And so I think that's the dynamic. It's you know, and this is one thing I want to keep preaching and I keep telling folks. It's not about us wanting some sort of sympathy, us wanting some sort of, condolences and encouragement and words. You know, we always preach about equality. Yeah, we want to be on the same playing field as everyone else. If it's a minor property crime, I only want to be charged for a minor property crime. I shouldn't get a death sentence.
Right.
So the flip side to that. So we know what we want. It's not about the way what I'm looking at is there is a lack of empathy and tolerance for these situations because uh-huh. folks have become so desensitized to it that they lack empathy. And they're just like, well, this is just something you have to deal with. You made choices in your life that led you to this result. I literally had someone tell me that. And so, you know, that's go ahead.
And it's not the same, but I'm thinking this sounds like someone that says, well, she dressed that way, so she wanted to be raped. See, that's exactly.
Exactly. Everybody wants to dance around the subject, and I haven't heard it yet, but we will hear it. When you look at George Floyd, guess what they're going to come up with? He was a big, scary black man. That's why we had to do what we had to do. That's the only defense these guys are going to be able to have, because the video shows the exact opposite. And what do they do with these narratives? They always want to post the pictures where we're in dress-down clothes, where we're baggy pants, gold teeth, all this other stuff, to paint us as someone, you know, that is almost superhuman. You know, I train jiu-jitsu, right? That's the martial art that I train. And I trained that for quite a few years. And so when the Trayvon Martin case happened, there was this big discourse in the hearings and even in the trial about how he had, you know, learned how to grapple and he was strong for his age and all this other stuff, and that he, you know, was almost like a superhuman 16-year-old. And it was one version versus no other version, because he wasn't there to tell his side of the story. You don't get to see the lanky kid that was actually the one that got the bullet pumped into his chest. But that's the narrative that they paint. And so that, for me, that's the fear I have. I've got two boys that I know would be intimidating to somebody when they get to a certain age. I spoke to a friend of mine. He said, man, you know, when I was 17 at a local high school, I had a resource officer say to me, man, you're a big dude. If I had to tussle with you, I would just pull a gun.
Wow. That's not right.
And so that's the mindset, because it's like, look, you're big and scary. So, you know, in my profession, I'm always overly nice. I'm overly respectful. I want to make sure that I don't have too much deepness in my voice, because I've been called an angry black man before. I've been told that I pulled the race card before. I've been told that, you know, I, you know, intimidated someone before. And this is when I was wearing a suit sitting across from them at a desk in a glass clear office. But I'm intimidating you by sitting there and talking to you.
Yeah.
And so like I said, I mean, you know, for me, one thing that is really almost like it's been pressing on my heart. I've really toned down a lot of my opinions about what's been going on over the years, because I too have gotten desensitized to it. I'm like, man, it's too much. You know, it hits too close to home. And then, you know, you want to start thinking about your branding and marketing as a local business owner. You don't want to rub folks the wrong way. So don't talk about your political and social opinions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I recently, with all these things that have been going on, it's like you, I started getting a feeling like, look, something needs to be said, because it doesn't just affect those folks in the lower income classes. It affects all minorities, regardless of what facet in life they are, what stage they are in, or what career path. Some of us were more lucky because we didn't have the facts turn in a certain situation and we were able to overcome. But there are way too many folks who don't get those opportunities, and it isn't fair either way.
This is a fine line, you know, because it's like, if you don't talk about it, it's the out of sight, or let's say out of earshot, out of mind thing. But then if you talk about it too much, then people are like, oh, just stop it already. You know, ooh. You know, so it's a fine line to try to walk, but it does need to be discussed. And the thing that I'm afraid of, and maybe you could talk about it since you have sons, is that we have a lot of the younger generation that don't have the exact same problem that some of the older generation have, because there's a lot of interracial dating and interracial friendships and stuff like that, which is a great thing. But at the same time, things that our young black children should be wary of, or at least aware of, are kind of getting pushed back or pushed aside because it happened then. And they're not being cautious, in my opinion, that this can still happen now, because there are still a lot of people out there. I mean, they talk about the white supremacist movements and all other type of movements that are still alive and well. They're just happening a little bit more under the radar, especially thanks to technology. You know, but it's still out there.
Right, and that's, you know, in a way, before, when where folks were riding around with their hoods on their, you know, on horses, and, you know, pulling up burning crosses and things of that nature, you know, obviously some of them were, their identities back then were protected, but at some level you knew if the person that was standing in front of you had a problem with you. Nowadays, it's concealed. And like you were saying, I would rather know that you had a problem with me for whatever reason, being a male, black, whatever, than it be concealed, because then that poses more of a threat, because I may trust you a little bit more, let you in more, and you can cut me deeper. And so, you know, I think that is a very poignant point there, because with kids these, you know, like, I feel old when I say kids these days, but when you say that, you know, with folks who are growing up now, these millennials who are, you know, experiencing it differently, you know, I don't know how much, you know, I think that it may be in a different package, but I do still believe that they still deal with it in some form or fashion, either with online bullying or just how they're placed in schools, different things like that, that could be even ingrained in the system in itself, that they're either cognizant of, or someone is, you know, that is where the parent needs to be able, or some guard, you know, some person in their life needs to be able to kind of expose that to them and explain what is going on. So like you said, that they don't walk into it blindly. One of my biggest things is, look, my kid is 5, but when is the right time to speak to him about how he would potentially be perceived? I mean, because there are instances where minority boys who are in elementary school, kindergarten, and first grade, that I've seen news articles of them having handcuffs put on them for some reason, and arresting small kids. So if that is happening to elementary school age kids, when do I have this conversation with this young man about how you respectfully talk to someone who is not of the same color as you to not offend them? Or how do you respectfully engage with authority figures versus how you may be comfortable speaking to mom and dad. You know, because there is that difference. We have to code switch. That's something that a lot of non-minority families don't have to worry about, is code switching, is figuring out how you can stay off the radar by the way that you interact with others.
Mm-hmm.
So
any of your children approached you and told you about a situation and it kind of clicked with you that this wasn't your typical, you know, disciplinary situation or whatever the case may be, that this was something beyond that, that this did have some racial overtones?
Fortunately, not with my kids.
Okay.
You know, I've had colleagues of mine who, you know, they tell me some stuff and I'm just like, wow. You know, I used to work with a guy, he's Caucasian and his wife is from South Africa. And he was telling me about how his, you know, I think he was 6 or 7 at the time, the little boy, you know, either kissed or, you know, was being flirtatious with a little white girl at the bus stop. And her parents, you know, went off on the little boy and his mom. And, you know, it was highly aggressive, and they figured because, you know, this is a minority family, they it's okay to talk trash to them. They didn't know that my colleague was a partner at a law firm and, you know, had some status. And so when he approached them the following week or the following day or whatever, as to how they treated his wife and son, and they realized that it was a white guy, you know, they were super apologetic, wanted to, you know, make things right, all this other stuff. But at the time that it all occurred, they were, you know, calling his wife out of her name. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, these are the kind of things that it's like, man, you know, when it comes to our children, they're held to a much higher standard, a more critical standard, and they need to be perfect. They need to fall in within a certain role. But if it's somebody else's kids, oh, they're just kids. They're just, you know, doing what kids do. But when our kids do something, they're thugs.
Well, and it's interesting to me, because you're talking about the apologies and stuff, and I was thinking about the case earlier this week with Christian Cooper, the bird
mm-hmm.
watcher, and
yep. Yep.
How the person that attempted to get him in trouble and got herself in trouble, how it's a sudden, it's a lot of apology, you know, I'm sorry, you know, because now she's lost her dog, she's lost her job. She, you know, the camera was on, so she got caught. And
mm-hmm.
so she's very apologetic now, but had the camera not caught her, would she still have her dog? Would she still have her job? Would she be profusely apologizing all over the place and saying, you know, she knows she was wrong? If she knew she was wrong, shouldn't have done it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so are you sorry because you know you did something wrong, or are you sorry because you got caught?
Right.
You
know? Yeah, and that's the interesting point there, because, like you said, they knew what they were doing was wrong, or they just felt that they, you know, were in a position where they had the right to do it. And one of the things that, you know, I was watching this the other day, they were saying that the majority of folks who have the mindset that, you know, this is overblown, that this is, that these situations are, you know, is not as egregious as they're painted out to be, that they're all, you know, driven to be racially motivated by the media. Those folks who have that mindset, right?
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them are impoverished white Americans themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between a impoverished white American and a minority, is that the impoverished white American still has that feeling of privilege that they are at least better than the minority. And so they could at least command more authority than the minority. And so they are emboldened by some of the rhetoric that they hear from TV and some politicians, we won't mention names, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what gives them the brashness about it to, oh, I'm going to call the police on you because I don't like what you're doing, because I can. They're going to believe me over you. It's the same thing with the lady who killed her autistic son. She wanted to blame it on black men. That's how he was abducted and murdered, and it comes out that she did it herself. But she wanted to pin it on minorities. Why is that? It's because it's easier to pin it on somebody who already in the social economic class is feared, or has been stereotyped, or has already been characterized as inherently criminal.
We're going to continue. You're fine. But we are going to take a quick break, and I want to let the men who can, because Attorney Simmons, he's fortunate enough he can manage his own schedule a little bit better than some, and we know that a lot of our black men are out there doing their jobs as they should. But if you are a black man that wants to comment or has an incident that they'd like to share and you want to join the conversation, because we want to hear from the men, we want everybody to listen, but we want to hear from our black men, the number is 516-387-1944. We're here with Attorney James Simmons. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you?
Good afternoon and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking about the issues faced by our black men. We're having a discussion with black men. We are here with Attorney James Simmons. And if you are a black man who wants to let people know, give people some insight in terms of what it actually means to live this life in these United States, we are a United States by law, but not necessarily by reality, especially our citizens, especially our black men. The number is 516-387-1944. Attorney Simmons, you were talking about promoting your business, and a lot of black men, particularly in a small business, or just black people anyway, there's even a debate in terms of when you're marketing yourself, do you put your face on the business card? Do you put your face on the advertisement? Because the thing is, you want to be judged by your business and not by your looks, unfortunately. There's some pretty weird-looking people out there with their faces on business cards and the like, that get business and don't have to – they don't debate this. But this is something that has to happen. Tell us about
you know, things that you're encountering or have encountered while just trying to live, just trying to conduct business?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so there's, you know, for, I'll put it this way, for professional folks in corporate America, there's always like a level of, you know, what you're going to present to the community so that you can, you know, be able to market yourself or be able to kind of, you know, conduct your business or, you know, provide your services. In my arena, in personal injury, one of the biggest parts of that is making sure that your potential or your prospective clients would know what type of attorney they're going to get, you know, and you know, what level of service. They've got to have some sort of feeling of comfort with the person that they're entrusting with, you know, such sensitive issue in their life. And, you know, you see these larger firms with, you know, it's one attorney or one family, you know, that of attorneys that are, you know, owning a firm or what have you. And those are always the folks that they put on TV. Those are always the faces of those firms. Those firms may have, you know, 20 to, you know, 30 or even 100 attorneys that work for them actually working the cases, but those folks would never be on the television because they want, you know, the faces of the firm to be those that connect with the clients. And so, yeah, for me, I don't, you know, I don't have my photo on my business card. It's intentional. I want to make sure that, you know, most of the critical information is on there. I don't like those. For me, it's kind of cheesy to do that, but the other aspect of it is, though, but I do have to market and brand myself as who I am. And so, you know, I'm a mixed race individual. I'm not only that, but, you know, I have tattoos and all these other kind of things that may be off-putting to folks. But I had to make a decision that I am either going to be genuine with potential clients or I'm going to put up a facade, and that's not going to be something that I would do. So, you know, I've branded myself as not being the cookie cutter 3-piece suit guy. It's more so I'm the down to earth, you know, individual that's there to help you, has been through the ringer, as most clients will experience or have experienced through their situations. And I'm going to be the one to help you get across that finish line and make you feel good about it. That's my take on it. But you're right. A lot of us can't do that. There are a lot of folks who they, by their name alone, will get discriminated against. If it is too ethnic, they may not get that business. I've had clients who, you know, when I worked at the bigger firms, we would have investigators go out to sign the clients, and the clients would want to know, okay, I picked this big firm. I know the name and the guy that's on TV, but who's working on my file? Then they want to know, well, what does he look like? You know, I'm going to pull him up. I want to read about him. I want to do, and I've actually had clients who wanted to switch because they weren't comfortable with what I presented. But they would pick another person at the firm who would basically have a mirror image of my biography, but there was only one difference. And so, you know, and it wasn't experience. So,
right. No, we're dealing with the same thing in real estate right now. And now I'm putting it out there. I know next month's home ownership month, but I'm putting it out there because, you know, you're submitting an offer. And you have to, usually when you're submitting a residential offer, the person who is making the offer or, you know, and the realtor representing that person, you know, you got to have your name on there. Okay. If it's an ethnic sounding name, you take a chance with some people, you know. And it's illegal let me put it in. I just want to make that clear. It is illegal to discriminate against a person because of their race, among other things. You know, it's in law, and we go through training and everything. So, I mean, you know, if you're a person out there, and probably I'm preaching to the choir, because the people that need to know this and need to understand this aren't listening to my show probably, but just in case, you know, if you decide that you don't want to accept the contract because of that person's race or faith or you know, there's the classes out there, just really be careful. It's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we are having to face that now. You know, the person doesn't like the way the name is. You know, and but you better come up with a better excuse than that to reject someone's offer. That's all
right.
I gotta say on that.
Right.
We're talking about business. You know. And you mentioned also, you know, but we're thinking about, we also have to look at people that are just going on trying to maybe go to the grocery store, maybe going to play racquetball or tennis or golf or whatever, going to the gym, just out for, you know, whatever, a drive. And it's like check and double check. I remember my husband and I were coming back through Georgia, back into Florida. We had gone to visit relatives, you know, road trip, and got pulled. And, you know, my husband got out of the car. I was kind of laid back in the car, so I'm not sure if the officer saw me originally. But you know, I wasn't smart enough to take out the phone and you know, shoot, you know, what was going on. But, you know, my husband was asked, you know, where he was coming from, where he was going, you know, license, all this kind of stuff. And is this your car? And it's like, no, this is my wife's car. He, you know, motioned to me. Well, by this point, I'm sitting up very straight and I'm looking in this officer's mouth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so concerned that had I not actually been there, something worse would have happened, you know. But we, you know, just, you know, be safe, go on your way, have a blessed, you know, and he didn't say have a blessed day, like I probably would have told him, you know, just, you know, be safe and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm in my heart, you know, and my heart can't prove anything, but in my heart, I'm certain that something more would have probably happened had I not been there. You know, then he might have been accused of stealing the car because it was in my name and not his, something.
It's unnerving what it could be to turn, you know, the set of events that occur. You know, obviously the facts of what happened, you know, in some of these recent tragedies, they're still out, you know, there's still information that's going to be processed and come out, and we'll find out more as to what, you know, set off the chain of events. But, you know, I'm sure that in each instance it was, you know, or at least in this George Floyd instance, it was one thing that would have been something minuscule or minor to any other, you know, or let's say the opposite race, if it had occurred to them or some other set of facts to where it wouldn't have went that way. And the reason why that's unnerving to folks like myself and other black males, I'm sure, is the fact that you don't know what is going to set somebody off or lead to a chain of events where you're worried about whether you're going to make it home that day. And so, you know, I was in a similar situation. Actually, in 2008, the night that there was an election for our president, you know, Barack Obama won the presidency, that I was at FAMU at the time. One of my buddies in my law school, we had an election party at his apartment. And so we all gathered at his apartment, and we're all watching the election results, and we're all excited because this could be the first time an African-American president is going to be elected. So the announcement comes through. We're all jumping up and down. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to go home to my apartment. I had a girlfriend at the time, so I'm going to go and, you know, see if she's up and you know, let's, you know, we're going to celebrate and, you know, I'll be able to hang with her. So I get in my car and I start leaving his apartment. And as soon as I get a couple of houses away from his apartment, blue lights turn on. So I pull over, and like I said, I'm probably a second year law student at this point. And so I was kind of smug about it. I was like, all right, let's see what this is about, because I wasn't doing anything. And so a police officer comes to the window. He's got another police officer, both Caucasian, another police officer off to the side a little bit, like watching. And so I thought that was kind of weird that there were two officers that were there. And so one of them asked, you know, the one that was close to the window asked me, you know, license registration. And then he starts going into why I'm in the neighborhood. And so, you know, I'm like, you know, what is the pertinence of that? And he tells me, well, this is a bad neighborhood, and we ran your plates, and your car is registered on the other side of Orlando. You know, what are you doing here? And, you know, I was smug about it, and I said, well, I'm here for an election party, you know, and just watched, you know, Barack Obama win. And the guy wasn't amused, and so he was like, well, you know, based off of this area, I want you to get out of your car so we can search it, because there's a lot of drug trafficking that goes on here. Now, I'm a law student, and I know that he didn't have the ability or the predicate or the probable cause to do this. He didn't have the probable cause to ask me to step out of my vehicle and search it with anything more than you're just in a bad neighborhood. But again, I'm a smug law student, and I know what I have in my car, and I want him to see what I have in my car. And so I said, okay, search my car. So I get out of my car, and I said, make sure you look in the trunk. And so they're looking at everywhere, and then they pop the trunk, and in the trunk is all my law school books, civil procedure, criminal procedure, con law, blah, blah, blah. Guy picks up one of the books, sees it, throws it back down. And so he's like, all right, well, you know, doesn't look like you have anything in your car. You're good to go. Go home. So I'm like, I won. You know, I'm thinking to myself like, yeah, you guys thought you were something, but I just wasted your time, right? Get in my car, start heading home. And I'm driving, and my buddy, he did live on a pretty, you know, bad side of town. So, you know, part of the drive home was through OBT. And so I'm driving down OBT, and, you know, Obama had just won. So I'm looking at some of these gas stations. You got people beating on drums. You got people banging on trash cans and different things, excited, celebrating. And I wanted to celebrate. But then I noticed in my rear view, those same two police officers were there. And they followed me for 30 minutes until I got home before they decided to leave. And the entire time I was driving, I said, you know what, man, they wanted to prove a point that, yeah, it doesn't matter that there's a black president and all this other stuff going on. We still got our thumb on you, because you speed up a little bit. You veer off a little bit, and we're pulling you over again. Or we're going to, you know, mess with you this entire night till you go home. And so these kinds of things happen even to, you know, professionals, folks who are in professional school or business or whatever. And it's that's what molds you as a person. That's the reason why I wanted it to, you know, at the time I was like, man, I'm going to have to go into criminal defense, because this is something that has to be happening to other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And even that system is frustrating. So like I said, you know, It does worry. It worries me a lot that you know, that these things still occur. There's a prevalence of their occurrence, and you know, I think more so than anything, it's just being more. You know, there's more vision on it because of the fact that everybody has a cell phone and an ability to take camera footage.
Yeah, I'm right now ready to go and invest in a dash cam and a body cam right about
mm-hmm.
now. And I want to going back to what happened to Mr. Floyd, I had me so tied up in knots, I don't know what to do. Because this is the thing, well, a couple things. One, I saw some of the video before the, you know, knee to the throat stuff started happening, where they escorted him, he was handcuffed, they set him up against the wall. And I don't know if what, you know, what was said, if anything was said or whatever, he didn't look like he was resisting arrest to me. Okay, so, you know, and what happened between that and him ending up on the ground with a knee to his neck is, you know, I don't know what all happened. All I can see, though, is in hearing the words that we've heard before, that I can't breathe, people are saying he's bleeding from his nose. People are saying he stopped bleeding. And the fact that the medical team got there and the officer still has his knee on this man's neck. Now, I'm sorry, to me, it just struck me as like this man and is out to prove a point and is not the total disregard for human life is out of the window. I think I think he had some anger and other stuff and it built up and it's like part of me just has a sense that he was killing this black man and he did not care. Okay.
Yeah.
Pandemic, whatever, you know, that has gotten this man all, you know, messed up and boiled up inside where he is just not. And there's other officers there. So if you took your knee off this man's neck, you've got other officers there to help you restrain this man until you can do whatever it is, the next step or whatever. The other officers, my husband says, should have been saying, hey, this is wrong. You need to stop doing this, pulling this man out. Mm-hmm. And they stood by and you know, witnessed this. And my thing is, people are upset now because there's all this rioting and stuff going on. And it's like, to me, it's just like this man apparently had some pent-up anger or frustration and took it out and took the life of this man. There's a whole community with some pent-up frustration and anger and everything, and this is the way they're taking this out. I'm not saying that is right, you know, just like it wasn't right for this man, this officer to kill Mr. Floyd. It wasn't right. Either case is not right. But
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
No, I was going to say, you're right. I mean, obviously one evil act shouldn't beget another, right? And so I do agree with you that whatever that man was possessed with, you know, obviously I got – watching portions of the video just made me turn off. I couldn't watch the whole thing. And
mm-hmm.
But I've watched a lot of commentary on it from different news sources, and you know they tell you, look, there's three different versions. There's one pre him being handcuffed where they're dragging him from the car. He doesn't look like he's resisting at that point. There's another
mm-hmm.
video that shows. Apparently, there's another video that shows at least three officers standing like on top of him so that he can't move. And so, like you were saying, there were the numbers were there. He was
mm-hmm.
handcuffed. I will tell you. So again, you know, I'm not trying to boast about the martial art that I practice in just because I want to say I'm a big bad dude. It's more so because I know grappling techniques and holds that kind of stand out to me. And so there is a move that we train where you practice the proper placement of where your knee is supposed to be. And the move's called
mm-hmm.
knee on belly, knee on belly. Meaning that you're putting your knee on their sternum or their belly to keep them down,
mm-hmm.
not anywhere else, because if you put it on their throat, they're not going to be able to breathe. It's
right.
It's a technique so that you keep your opponent from being able to get up and attack you. You're keeping them immobilized until you get more help. It's a self-defense technique. So when I look at what happened, I'm looking at it as, no, this was intentional what he was doing, because it wasn't about just holding them down, in my opinion. And then I think for folks to say that there were so many people screaming at this cop and so many folks saying, hey, can we just check his pulse? The paramedics mm-hmm. showed up. They just wanted to check his pulse. That right there, in my opinion, and I don't need to watch the video to figure this out, but if there's somebody screaming at you and you've been on this guy's neck for 7 minutes,
right.
you're doing this defiantly. You're doing
right.
it in spite of them saying that. So, yes, there was something going on with him mentally and whatever. Now, obviously, what's going on in Minneapolis is concerning right now, because yes, there's a lot of rioting going on and you know, buildings are being burned and you know, just a lot of disarray there. And you know, there's some truth that not everyone that is doing that is affiliated with that city, or you know, some of them may be doing it as an opportunistic, you know, means to loot and things like that. But at the end of the day, this spawned because of the outrage. And when you see these things happen, it's because we're not seeing, you know, individuals are not seeing the change that they wish to see. They're not seeing the punishment. You're way, you know, these guys still haven't been charged. And while we have been on this show, I got a breaking news update from Channel 9 that the officer who killed George Floyd had traveled to Windermere, and there's a protest outside of that home right now in our own backyard.
No.
That killer is here. And so what is going on in Minneapolis has traveled to Central Florida. And
why do they always come to Florida? Why do crazies come to Florida?
That Florida man. It's that Florida man. It makes them want to come and meet him.
Oh no. Oh man. Okay. Well, okay, we got a couple minutes left, so what do you think needs to be said and done at this point, in your opinion?
I will tell you this, and just one thing is, we do a lot of talking. The one thing I will say is, what we can pull from these folks that are in Minneapolis is, there is power in coming together and doing something active but responsible. And I think that there needs to be a push for tolerance and empathy. We need to have more folks like you're giving me a platform, and you're giving other folks an opportunity to talk about what they've been going through. The piece you did on civil rights the other day was awesome. So what I'm saying is, us as black males, we need to talk about these things. We keep so much stuff inside that we don't talk about it, and it doesn't allow the folks who don't understand to at least empathize, or at least want to, you know, kind of say, let me step back and you know, try to understand. And I will say, from just speaking my story, because like I said, I kind of tracked some things that happened throughout my life. And I had so many folks reach out to me from, you know, that like I said, white colleagues that knew me
mm-hmm.
for years. They knew me
mm-hmm.
for years. And they were like, man, I did not know you were going through any of that when we worked together. Like,
yeah.
you know, I am, you know, and they're like, man, you know, I never viewed it this way.
Yeah.
Or some of them, I had someone say, man, I remember when they were calling you that, and how horrible I felt about it, but I never said anything.
Yeah.
So
Attorney James Simmons,
we got to go.
Okay. I wish we had more time. I thank you for taking the time out of your day to share, and have a blessed day and blessed weekend, and you and your family be well and stay safe.
You too, ma'am. You too. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Have a very blessed weekend. Join us back on Monday for Mortgage Monday. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Open up your mouth. Give them the fruit of your lips.